What's good? What's good? I am back. Yours truly, one and only Paul Masson, live from Vietnam Friday, as usual, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and the audio version will go to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much, much more. Hope everybody's doing good. Weather's a little hot, supposed to be last week of summer. But that don't mean nothing for North Carolina. That don't mean that we're not still going to get hot weather. So we got a guest coming on in a few. We're going to give him a little bit of time to come on. Told him we'd be live at 7. And we actually interviewed a group member of his recently, DJ Too Tough. Definitely go check out that interview. Also, go check out the interview. Who did I interview last week? I want to say it was Culture Freedom. Yeah, Culture Freedom of Poor Righteous Teachers. Go check out that interview. And he has some new projects coming as well. And, of course, recently interviewed Lord Zen of the Visionaries, Bo Rock of the Dove Shack, and DJ Jam, who was the official tour DJ for Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. And we also interviewed Chiron, a.k.a. Solo, of Screwball. Go check that out as well. A big Screwball fan. The album was dope. Beats were banging. Love the energy. See if he's ready. Give me one second. I do plan on doing music reviews tomorrow. I don't know what time yet. Also, I got an interview Monday with James Get Down Brown, Bare Knuckle Fighter at the BKFC. That'll be on the Paul Picker podcast. Go follow me on there as well. Mr. Myrtle Beach. Oh, look, the picture popping up. Oh, we got the new, I guess we got the new look on the, I seen they made some changes on the comments recently, so I guess that's how they looking now. I don't know if I can change them. There's a, some kind of settings that I can go in and change the way the comments are. Give my guest a few more minutes. I don't got much to really talk about. Ain't too much hip hop news. I'm just really ready for the Mobb Deep album. I heard a song. Prodigy verse was dope as hell, as usual. Beat was cool, but could have been a little better, in my opinion. You know, we talking about doing a new Mobb Deep album. You need to make sure every song is a banger, in my opinion. Mobb Deep is known for dropping bangers. Okay, come on. What was that? They was cool. Who's they? They was cool. This guy. How'd you get your diploma, man? T-H-A-Y was cool. Look at that. They was cool. Mr. Myrtle Beach. All right. So our guest just popped in. And we about to introduce him. Straight from the mean streets of Philly. One of the first hip-hop groups to come out of Philly. Back in, I want to say 89, I could be wrong. I think they formed around 85, and I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But we're going to bring on the one and only Tone Love of the Tough Crew.
Everything's on. Yo, yo.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, all right. Appreciate you. Paul Masson, Paul Masson.
Yeah, everybody know about that Paul Masson.
Yeah. Old heads anyway.
Yeah. That's so good. You still in Philly? You still stay in Philly?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know a lot of cats be moving from up north down south nowadays. That's why I be asking, like,
yeah, actually, I got a little spot a little bit down south.
Yeah,
it's kind of like up north down south, but yeah, I got another little spot too. But you know, I'm still in the danger zone. What's happening with you?
I can't complain, man. Weather keeps flip flopping, but that's North Carolina for you.
Word.
So I want to start here. So Tough Crew forms and says 1985. I was literally 6 years old. How old were you guys then?
Wow. Well, actually, yeah, we formed about, yeah, I would say 86. I was 86.
Okay.
Yeah, I was actually 20, and my boys was like, I think they was around 18. 17, 18, because one of them was still in high school, L.A. Kid. He was just finishing up high school. He went to high school with Will Smith, actually. And shout out to Will.
Okay.
Yeah, and the rest. Yeah, we was in, so in that 18 to 20 range. But I was the oldest.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So around that time, what was the local Philly hip-hop scene like?
Oh man, the hip hop scene was it was thriving. At that time, it was a lot of street bands, street groups that was doing block parties. You know, we had sound guys with sound systems that was set up, and so all of the artists that was just getting into it that were inspired. Most of us were inspired from what we was here coming out of New York, and started tapping in, and so we got an opportunity to hone our skills out in the park, out here too, actually. You know, they were set up in Fairmount Park. It was a spot called the Belmont Plateau. And okay, we could go out there with equipment. We could go out there with our cars. A lot of people used to ride through and just, you know, show off their cars and stuff. Almost just like what Will was saying in the summertime song. That's how it was. And, yeah, he wrapped it up in that song, now that I think about it. But which is a Philly classic, Summertime. But he was speaking on how we would come out in the parks, and the sound guys were set up, the DJs were set up, and if you was nice, you would get a chance. Somebody would pass you a mic, and you can get on. So, hip hop scene was thriving, flourishing, I should say, at that time. Before we actually got a chance to get on the air, which was not too long after.
Now, when would you say is the moment that y'all really started to gain exposure?
I would say moment probably was early 87. We had completed our first album, which was called Philly Fan Jam. It stood for Philadelphia and New Jersey All-Star MCs. And we had got our songs listened to by, at that time, Lady B was on the radio. She was on an AM station, I believe, when she first started, WHAT, and she played our songs. She gave us some help. Shout out to Lady B, the queen of hip hop out here. She put us on with our first single, which I believe was called Philly Style. And okay, yeah, that was our first exposure from there. She really, between her and another lady, Mimi Brown, which had a rap show on another station out here called DAS, WDAS. Both of them are iconic stations. It was Power, went from HAT to Power 99 and DAS. But yeah, they the local DJs played our music, and it immediately caught on.
Now, that first album, is that the album where they were talking about it says the known rulers or something like that?
The Crown Rulers. Yeah, the
Crown Rulers.
Yeah, that was the first album, the Fan Jam album. So they was from New Jersey. So that's what we called them. Yeah, Philly and New Jersey All-Star MCs. It was like a collab, but it was really our album, and we was bringing them out. So we put them on the same record to introduce them.
And how'd y'all link up with them, being y'all was in Philly and they were Jersey?
Well, Philly and New Jersey is just across like a little area of water, actually. You could hit New Jersey, you drive over the bridge, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, Yeah, 5 minutes. You were in New Jersey. So they were from East Camden, which is literally right across the water. And, okay. And we used to, go over there a lot. We did shows over there a lot in Camden. When we were getting known in Philly, we were also getting known in New Jersey. Like I said, it's pretty close. And they lived around there. So, people was coming to us like, trying to get on. And my manager was looking for other artists as well, my manager at the time.
When I interviewed Too Tough, I want to say that he said something about y'all did a show when y'all first met Ultra Magnetic or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Shout out to DJ Too Tough, my DJ, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, we was going up New York just to get a little feel for it as we was working on our music and get a little feel for what was the culture was like coming out of NY. And we went up there and we locked in with a couple of up and coming artists at the time, Ultra Magnetic, I think Chris KRS-One, they was all from the Boogie Down Bronx, South Bronx. And we went up there and we was really looking for some production and some influence on the production because we had just started. And they were, the boy Set G, shout out to Set G from Ultra. He started putting us on with how to use the SP-12 and how to make music. Okay. And then he actually started making some tracks for us too. Yeah. So we had some.
So, influence. And they ended up producing on the first, y'all's, well, not the first album, but like the second album, if I'm not mistaken.
No, actually, the first album.
Oh, the first album?
That you were talking about. Yeah, they produced a little bit on the second one, too. But I believe, they actually did something for the Crown Rulers on the first album. That's what happened. And then by our second album, we was friends with them and definitely being helped and influenced by Ultra Mag. You know, they used to come out to Philly. We'd show them around. We'd come to New York and do shows with them. So that's how it all started with our contact with Ultra Magnetic MCs.
So y'all had the record My Part of Town. Would you say that was y'all's biggest single?
Yeah. For the record, I say at this point, that's the one that we blew up. My Part of Town was a local hit. We was promoting Philly and, you know, what our vibe was. And it just took off from there. A lot of our fans that left the city, maybe some of them were going to college, some of them were going to into the service, and they like just took our music with them. So we got a lot of promotional help from our fans by them just rocking out with us other places that they went. Because at the time, we didn't have like a major situation or nothing. So we really got a lot of support from the fans as they went abroad to let other cities and towns know about us.
So y'all didn't have no major label deal when that song hit Billboard?
Nah.
And what was the feeling like then when y'all, because y'all had a top 25 hip-hop record on Billboard.
Yeah, it was a good feeling, man. It was a really good feeling. We were realizing, like I said, that, our music was getting around locally. We know we had a strong buzz. They had a thing at that time called the Power 99. It was the top 9. Or the top 10 at 9, and we was winding up on the top 2 or 1, number 1 or number 2, that whole time that was running for a long time. So I realized, locally we was catching fire, and then from seeing our name in the Billboard list, that was really the confirmation that we was people was tapping in with us.
Now, you said something about military friends. Do you think that had any impact on it? Because being from Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, one thing I know is we had a strip club back in the days that was really popular because of military people, because they go from city to city and state to state, and they always taking something with them, and they're spreading the word. Did you think it had any impact?
Oh, for sure. Like I said, I literally as we went around different places, we was hearing our music, particularly in Florida. It's really, really, really caught on in Miami. And, Two Live Crew, shout out to Luke and Two Live Crew from back in the day. They showed us a lot of love by bringing us down there because guess they was hearing our music and it was playing in the club. So they was reaching out to us to come do shows with them. So that's really got us around in the South. off from our buzz in Florida. I mean, I guess they heard in Georgia and the Carolinas, and like I said, it was a lot of different army stations. You know, yeah. Fort this, Fort that, Fort Bragg. Yeah. And if people was going in, they was turning people on like, yo, you ain't never hear a Tough Crew from Philly? And at the time, it was on cassettes, our music. So they would actually be like, yo, you got to check this cassette out. And, you know, that's why to this day I love my fans. We always did the music for them, and they always showed us the love by turning people on, because we really didn't have a lot of videos or big major label promotion or nothing like that. Our fans was the biggest promo and the DJs in colleges, which we always also reached out to.
And you weren't like y'all's music, would you say it was anywhere close to Two Live Crew?
Not really.
But that's still good though. That's still good, because they could tap into your fans, you could tap into their fans and things.
Yeah,
of that nature.
We really didn't make the type, I wouldn't say the type of songs that Two Live Crew was making, but I think the common ground was that we had heavy bass influence in our music. And so they probably was vibing with us off of how that 808 was dropping, you know, in our music. We had a lot of 808 influence behind it. That was just part of our sound. And that was heavy influence in the music down in Florida, bass music.
Yeah.
So that's what we had in common. Excuse me for one second, bro.
You good?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, so back to my part of town. Do you feel like at that time that was a perfect representation of how the streets of Philly were?
Yeah, pretty much. We didn't, in that song per se, talk too much about it, but we was just repping my part of town and a little bit of Philly's vibe. But mainly we was just talking about, you know, ourselves and a little bit of what was happening as we got started. You know, I remember the lyrics to that song was kind of talking about where we was coming from and what we was dealing with to get on, stuff like that. But it was Philly's flavor. I think it became a Philly anthem, which it is now. It's stamped as a classic Philly, classic hip hop song from that era, but particularly a Philly anthem, was because Philly, I think number one, was proud that, you know, they had a home team that was really getting on and getting out there. And two, it was our kind of, I guess, swag. You know what I mean? Our kind of the way we talked, the way we swagged. And that was, you know, very local vibe. So I would say, yeah.
So when you're in these groups that are just more and more members are in, like, what's the creative process? Because I know everybody's trying to get the shine. Like, how do y'all decide who's on what song and who's not on what song?
You know, we didn't really struggle a lot with that. We was real generic with it. I would say when we was in the creative process, being as it was really two MCs, me and Ice Dog, Overlord Ice Dog, shout out to the dog. We was the lyrical ones, and LA Kid was the producer, Too Tough was the DJ, Monty G was the beatbox, and so everybody knew their role. But when it came to writing, me and Ice wrote pretty much for LA Kid. He was also had some lyrical skills, so we wrote for him, but he was mostly concentrating on the beats. He was the beat creator, and we didn't really struggle with too much of who gonna say what. We just wrote it. Sometimes Ice was writing, sometimes I was writing. We wrote it, we just shared the lyrics, shared the space. It wasn't really a struggle. It was only two of us.
You said something that's always interesting to me, because you said you wrote for what you said his name was again?
Ice Dog.
Who's the guy you said you wrote for?
Oh, for LA, yeah, for LA Kid.
Ice Dog.
No, LA Kid.
Oh, LA Kid. So why is it you think hip hop is the only genre that like kind of frowns on those kind of things? Like people writing songs for other people?
You know, I say it might have been.
I mean,
been,
it's part of the business.
Well, yeah, it is. But I think it might have been frowned on a little because it was all about expressing yourself, or, you know, really being, you know, being true to the, you know, the lyrics. If you're writing about you and people wanted to connect with the artist, the MC, the DJ, they wanted to connect personally. So they wanted to hear what you had to say, mostly about your thing. But us as a group, whether one of us wrote for another one or not like that, it was still collectively representing us. And I think actually when in the occasions where we did might have wrote something for each other, which mostly, you know, like I said, it was just me or Ice, but we might have shared a lyric or two here or there, but it would be something that we was like, yo, you should say that because that's like your personality, or, you know, it didn't happen often. Most often we wrote for it, we wrote our own bars, but the few occasions where we shared, it was somebody writing and they felt like they were writing for, because we were like brothers. I was writing for my brother and I know how he is, so he's writing something for me. You know, Ice wrote something for me knowing how I was. So he said, you do that part. That's you right there. And when we did write, you know, like I said, for each other in the few occasions, it was something in there that brought out that person's personality.
So y'all open, I mean, y'all toured with Two Live Crew, which I can only imagine how wild that was. But y'all have also opened for like Public Enemy, Run DMC, and a lot of other people. Is there like one group that stood out to you that y'all like opened up for or toured with?
Yeah, I really did like doing shows with Two Live Crew. I really liked doing shows with Public Enemy. It was hype to be around those dudes at the time. You know, both of them was really making a name for themselves. And, you know, for us just starting, it was very cool to get with other groups that we actually listen to their music and then wind up, you know, doing shows with. I always got a kick out of that. But Public Enemy, that was one of the ones that I really, you know, enjoyed performing with, as well as the local artists. We had some artists out of Philly. It was fun doing shows with Will at that time. You know, it was Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. And we would be, you know, and they was just getting on too. He was like one of the hottest solo artists out of Philly. So we was one of the hottest groups out of Philly, and we'd a lot, you know, be on shows together. And I always enjoyed, you know, their presence as well.
So I was seeing on the fourth album, Still Dangerous, you and Too Tough were absent on that. What was going on there? Were y'all doing solo projects?
No, yeah, well, actually it wound up being that, but we had went through a little situation, you know, which a lot of groups went through back to the day.
Yeah, and
me and Too Tough had embarked on a solo career after having some issues with the management and how things was going. And honestly, you know, we felt like, you know, we was being taken advantage of, and knowing where our music was taking off, we wasn't going to stay in that position. So we had an actual deal set up with Capitol Records. A lot of people don't know, but the deal that MC Hammer got was actually offered to us first before he came out from Capitol Records. Yeah, so that would have been us being known and promoted and pushed by, you know, Capitol Records the way that Hammer was.
Did a good job with Hammer, I could tell you that.
And, you know, shout out to Hammer too. He did his thing. One of the greatest performers in the world that I've seen. And I realized that deal, you know, the way it came off the table was really just a lack of managerial expertise. And so I was looking from there to see how I can.
So that was the Tough Crew deal?
Yeah, originally the Tough Crew deal. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. We was the first group that they wanted to sign before Hammer got on. He was the next act that they looked at. You know, maybe we'd have been on the label together, but I know we was offered a deal right before he came out on Capitol. And so they also had signed Schoolie D for a minute too.
Okay.
He had a deal situation, but you know, we just looking for different leadership management at that time. Me and Too Tough, the rest of the group elected to stay there, and so we rolled, and that's when you saw us break off.
So I know you were talking about y'all were doing a lot of 808 stuff, which is like really everything in the mainstream nowadays is damn near 808. Do y'all see any of your influence in today's Philly hip hop artists?
Today's, I would say, although I don't see it as much because I think nobody really ever got our style the way our style is. However, I was told by a lot of Philly artists that we influenced their career, them wanting to rap or looking up to us. And, you know, my DJ who wound up being Too Tough, a pioneer of DJing. A lot of DJs I heard say that they started practicing Too Tough scratches. Like they was using his scratches that he put down on the record as like a litmus test to see how well they was coming along as a DJ. So it was like, if you could cut any of Too Tough scratches, you was getting there, you know? And for us, a lot of them have told me that we really was the artist that they were looking up to and listening to at the time when they embarked on becoming MCs or rappers. So shout out to all the up and coming artists out of Philly that made a name for themselves. Now I know they know about us. We still get mad love here and respect as pioneers. And a lot of them told me they started because they were listening to us when they started rapping, including even Black Thought. He saw me in the club and told me, shout out to Tyreek, my bro, and Pierre. He said, yeah, you just want to tell you, y'all inspired me to rap. When we first started, y'all, we was rocking to y'all and, you know, making sure we was comparing ourselves to y'all, which he actually wound up using a record, one of our songs on one of his albums.
What's your opinion on the Philly artists today?
My opinion on the Philly artists? Honestly, because I'm a storyteller kind of rapper, I consider myself an MC. Mm-hmm. I consider some of the rappers, and I know who's the MCs. I look up to a lot of them, a few of them, I would say. I can't say a lot because some I wish, I put it like this. I can appreciate all the talent. There's a lot of talent with the Philly artists today, but I don't appreciate the messages because I know how powerful that the words influence people and the messages that are negative breed negative activity.
Yeah.
And, you know, people listening to that music, they become what they behold. So whatever you be listening to through your ear gate or you watching through your eye gate can have an influence on your whole output and what you say and how you feel and what you do. And I've seen that happen in Philly with a lot of the rap that's, you know, drill or trap or whatever you want to call it is influencing our community negatively. So as much as I appreciate the talent that they have, I don't appreciate all of the words. I don't think that all the words, you know, should be heard, that they're benefiting the listener.
Yeah, there's a saying, what the eyes see, the ears hear, the mind believes.
Facts. So you know, I've seen that happen in our community, how the music influences the people's personality. And it's really our responsibility to put music out there that's beneficial to the listener. So that's what I'm doing. You know, I got some solo music now that I'm really focusing mostly on that. Tough Crew, we did do an album not too long ago, I think the beginning of 2024, end of 23, which we have available right now. It's called Back by Dope the Man. And I mean, that's hip hop. It's just raw hip hop, but I'm focusing on some songs I'm bringing out now to try to, you know, put that fire out and speak to my people about some things. Cause you know, hip hop was also designed to be our communication link. No matter what coast you was on, this is the way that we tapped in with each other and spoke to each other and addressed issues amongst our community, you know, and I think that I could still do that. Hopefully I could still do that.
And, you know, on top of the negative content, an issue I have with the trap and the drill sound is you can't tell what region anybody's from anymore.
No, because it's not.
It's all the same.
Right. The actual music. Sound is very similar and the messages are very similar.
Yeah, very similar. So you don't know where anybody's coming from nowadays. No, the West Coast is the only one I think still kind of putting out some sounds that you could say, oh, this is West Coast. But everybody else, it's like everybody else is all the same, man.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon, but it is true. You could tell where we was all from before when the songs had different, you know, more lyrical substance, I would say. And that would let you know as you listen to the rapper where they was from. But I could clearly see what you're saying. That's an unfun fact right now.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing. Some facts, they're not fun, man. But I mean, the facts are the facts, you know?
Unfun facts, bro. I wish it was, you know, I'm a lyricist, so I really appreciated the songs that was saying something to me. You know, whatever it was mostly communication, but it wasn't very harmful. Now, you had groups out there who was promoting that, you know, your NWAs, your, you know, Mobb Deeps, your, and I liked them, you know what I mean? To be honest, you know what I mean? I did like them, respect them and stuff, but I was always hoping and conscious of the fact that we needed to keep our lyrics either feel good or informational, educational, or just good old feel good hip hop with it. You know, a subject that was could be funny or whatever, like the Bismarcky type songs. So
yeah,
I just enjoy, you know, I'm looking at the front door. You know, I just like songs that was like that, what PE was standing for, you know.
Or like my last week's guest, Culture Freedom, Poor Righteous Teachers, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so PRT, shout out to Poor Righteous. Yeah.
Another unfun fact is there's not a lot of groups in hip hop no more. What do you think that's about? Everybody's just selfish, solo?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, you had songs, you know, May God Bless the Dead, you know, that Biggie had, you know, Ready to Die. You had songs like Pac had, God Bless the Dead, Me Against the World. But those themes, you know, what do those themes represent? Yo, be ready to die, only live for today. Yeah. That's what I got from Ready to Die, only live for today. Me Against the World was like, yo, you can't, you know, look out for nobody else.
Man, you ain't cool with nobody? You ain't cool with nobody against the whole world?
That's what I was saying. Like, yo, I think that was strategically came about with the powers that be that was behind Big and Pac to promote those type of themes so that we would not be, you know, hip hop showed solidarity, you know.
Yeah.
But we was a collective group, a whole collective culture. It wasn't just about the individual song. Hip hop was a culture of individuals that we pretty much could say we was together. No matter where we was from, we was together, and that was the common denominator, our culture. And, you know, I think it was people that had a design on what we was doing to divide and conquer. So they promoted artists and pushed them with the A&R to say those type of, to push those type of themes. And they would pick our heroes and say, but talk about this and talk about how it's you against, you know, and it was just, it was hurtful. You can see now how it was hurtful to the hip hop community. It was very, very divisional.
Well, think about Biggie. Like, Ready to Die. Biggie was young. You had a whole life ahead of you. You're ready to die, dude? I got hit by a car, man. I'm not ready to die, yo.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to die either. I wasn't ready to die either. But that's what I mean. Our people embraced that, and then everybody didn't realize. Yeah. And it was giving them a whole different paradigm, whole different mindset.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we slowly left from us to me. And that's how the people who was putting up the bag designed it to be. They wanted it to be me. And we would just all become crabs in a barrel instead of us as a hip hop culture community, you know, and, you know, you just start seeing less and less collabs from that. And that kind of energy being put out there is divisive. It's still divisive.
And the last group in hip hop that was really big just pretty much got killed off when Takeoff died, the Migos.
Yep.
Once he died, I was instantly like, damn, man, they're done, man. Because I thought he was the best anyways, even though he wasn't considered the more household name, you know, like Quavo and Takeoff. But I thought Offset.
Yeah.
But I thought Takeoff was like the best. I literally thought he was the best. And when he go, I was like, they'll never be the same, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was I think, you know, between me and you, kind of plotted out, planned out too.
I've heard rumors about that.
Yeah, that added a little more to the division, man. Like I said, every time it was somebody trying to be, you know, a collective, it was something sitting there to divide that, you know, so that every could be one man standing. You know how powerful we would be as far as a voice, as far as an influence, without the outer external influence of people who weren't even hip hop and their influence on hip hop to take us out of the hip hop culture and bring us into the rap game culture, which was all about murder and mayhem. And you know, pretty much prostitution and division, and just it brought our whole self-esteem down. You know, you stop hearing songs like self-destruction, which was trying to nip it in the bud early. That's what that song was done for, because we were seeing that trend go towards, you know, negativity, but it didn't start like that. It was all feel good. Everybody came out in the party. You rapped or you listened to the rappers, you listened to the DJs, you rock with the sound dudes, and you got home safe, you know? Even if it was a rumble, you got to leave home and live another day. But promoting all this negativity and killing in the music, drill, kill, trap, all of those things was just divisive measures to divide and conquer hip-hop. And it actually literally worked.
Yeah, because I think even today, like the... I guess you could say everybody from the 90s era is pretty much considered underground nowadays, right?
Yeah.
But you even see in underground where there was some divisiveness, like when, you know, the whole Puerto Rican and hip hop thing, I think that was very divisive. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of Puerto Ricans got offended and, you know, yeah. I mean, and sometimes, I interview bare knuckle fighters and... Mm-hmm. Last guy I interviewed, you know, was saying, you know, sometimes people need to just breathe before they do things sometimes and mm-hmm. just think about it. Because, like, bare knuckle fighters, they're always getting tested out. And, you know, people try to test them out in the public. So he's like, mm-hmm. I breathe, man. Because if I don't, man, like, I could end up, you know, knocking this dude out and then I'm going to jail. You know what I'm saying? Because he tried to test me and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think, like, even with, like, the Jay-Z and they said recently, what was old boy said? Black Thought is a trillion times better than Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
I would. Okay, so underground cats might would say that. Hip-hop purists might would say that. But the mm-hmm. masses would never say that.
The masses would never say that. And, I mean, the fact that that's even made to be relevant is divisive, because to me, both of their contributions is respectable. You know, both of their contributions to the music that we do is respectable. Granted, I didn't give like that first earlier comment I made about what was being said. I don't think that Jay-Z always said what should be said, but I know that his contribution was very influential and to some degree, some people valuable. So nothing has to be compared to them, other than all I could say is the common denominator, there was two very influential, talented MCs that brought their style of music to hip hop and actually, you know, touched the people. And, you know, to say who's better and better, again, that causes the kind of divisiveness that we don't need between.
Just like the LeBron and the Jordan shit.
Right.
You got people going at each other, you know, the people calling LeBron's fans the LeBron sexuals, and you know, it gets deep, man. It's like, you know, everybody wants to die on their hill of who they defending.
Exactly. And amongst the artists, I bet you they all was playing each other. Those two artists you just talked about, I'm sure they was listening to each other's music. So it's really more important for hip hop for us to recognize and value what was brought to the table by the artists that the people loved, and how we developed something ourselves. It was our thing, which we gave it away and allowed it to be polluted and raped and took an advantage of. But the culture of hip hop being sabotaged and then taking that away from us, which was our way of communicating healthily with each other, and then giving us the rap game, which was really shoved down our throat. Like you said, real hip hop is underground. Why? Because they wasn't given the same equal exposure on the stations to the people who had something to say that was relative.
The mainstream right now, yeah.
Right. And so they're pushing those certain artists because they're pushing their agenda. And the agenda behind those artists is to divide and conquer the hip hop community as well as our people as a whole, to pit us against each other after so much blood was shed for us to come together. And I'm not even saying anybody outside, if you outside of being of my actual ethnicity, and you, but you had no feelings towards us, hurtful feelings towards us as a people, then that's why you've seen so many white people embrace, and people of other denominations embrace hip hop, because it was a collective that they could even get down with, and it wasn't with what happened, you know, 400 something years ago to even establish, you know, division and segregation. So that's why you saw the suburbs embrace hip hop, you know?
Yeah.
The kids of the next generation behind, you know, the generation from 60 years ago embraced our thing because they was like, yo, they real, what they saying is real, what they doing is real, we like it, we want to be a part of it. And hip hop was never going to be that way if we'd have kept maintained control of it. But those powers that be that took control of it changed the whole narrative.
Something feels different to me now, though, because you named a group earlier. Like, my favorite album of all time is Mobb Deep Infamous. Uh-huh. And I think about, you know, the times when I came up, when you had your conscious rappers, your backpack rappers, your gangster rappers, your commercial mainstream rappers, your sexual rappers. You had it all, right? But we listened to a lot of gangster rappers because we was, you know, we was giving everything a shot. Midwest, West Coast. You know, up north, down south, you know, 8-Ball and MJG, Ghetto Boys, whoever. But it didn't seem like people were going out and trying to mimic these gangster rappers back then. And now it seems like, oh man, everybody's mimicking this. Like you said, I don't think this stuff is hip hop nowadays because it has zero elements. They're not even MCs.
It doesn't have none of the hip hop pillars of hip hop. You know, they surprised to hear scratching, which Tough Crew, we still do scratching on our songs.
You don't never hear that in the mainstream no more. No scratching.
Nope. Or beatboxing.
No beatboxing, no breakdancing, no graffiti. Right. The fashion is feminine as hell. The fashion, these dudes out here wearing mini skirts now, yo.
Bro, well, they wanted to, you know, the effeminate. That's a whole nother. Yeah. Might take me another
emasculated. Yeah, they emasculated it. Yeah.
Emasculated it. And that would be, you know, probably take me a whole nother to dig. We could dig into that, but it would be another interview, bro. But I will say that the culture of hip hop was stolen, raped, perverted, and misused.
And changed and said, repackaged and like, here you go. Here's hip hop. No.
Well, it's the rap, and it's not. It's the rap game, and the rap game has some elements to it too. But most of the elements are destructive, and hip hop got put aside and buried. It's like they put hip hop in a trunk and closed the lid and try to keep it down. But it's still, hip hop is still there. The culture is there. Some people that appreciate that who grew up on that and they want to do that, and it's just not being, it's being kept out of the limelight.
But this is the craziest thing to me. Mm-hmm. The biggest artist on the planet, as far as hip hop goes right now, is Kendrick, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
But they don't want to sign any kind of artist, any more artists that have Kendrick's content, it seems like.
No.
Or J. Cole from my city, my hometown city. I would put him more on the positive side of hip hop. This guy rides a bike in the city, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's people who kept made sure as they was getting that shine that they kept 10 toes down. And I appreciate those artists in particular that you just mentioned. They focused on keeping 10 toes down and not letting the powers that be pollute their authenticity. And so they happened to get pushed through because they was the people's champs. And so they got pushed through and got some shine out there like that. But they don't want to really let too many people who are, you know, on the mic that's woke, get to speak their piece. You know, they really don't want too much of that.
All right, so we about to be hitting this hour mark soon. Tell us about some of these new projects you got. And I know you do, it says you do community outreach too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that using my platform to try to help with the nonviolence. I started a program called Tough Love Movement. And since I'm Tone Love from the Tough Crew.
Tough Crew, that makes sense. Tough Love.
And I'm from, and I'm from the city.
And these people need some tough love nowadays, I think, man.
Mm-hmm. And what that movement is all about, where I'm trying to use music as a vehicle and a platform, but we speak in consciousness to the young people, presenting some different scenarios that they deal with through some acting skits in between the music, and trying to tap in on conflict resolution and positive relational behavior and those kind of things that we could build our community back up on. So I bring it through the music and through a little acting skits and through some speakers, and collectively it's like almost like a concert, but it's designed to, you know, to wake up the masses and get us back to community rather than division and you know, killing each other and stuff like that. So that's one music project. And then I'm working on my own songs right now that I never really brought out.
Okay.
I have a nice little catalog of joints that I wanted to just put out to my people before I'm finished doing this. So while Tough Crew did the project recently, and then we're about to be promoting that a little heavier, also promoting my own solo stuff. Particularly, I got a song I did for the Eagles. I don't know if you're an Eagles fan. I know you're from North Carolina.
Nah,
but, you know, you're
the
now
Eagles
rocking.
Are killing
with the
it right now. Y'all killing it right now.
You're now rocking with the best. That's the Eagles' new song.
Y'all killing it right now, man. Y'all can literally be in the Super Bowl again this year.
Yeah. So this going to be the anthem. It's called Bird Gang.
Okay.
It's by me, myself, solo. I had originally did a song for the Eagles way back in the day called Bring It Home for Jerome. That was for Jerome Round, who died. But this is the new song, and I'm going to be promoting that, as well as the new Tough Crew album that's out. So what I'm putting on the screen right here is USB copies of my music. Yeah, this is USB copies. I sell these.
Oh, that's like the USB cards?
Yeah.
And yeah, okay.
My music on there, and my fans still willing to rock that. That's the Tough Crew album. It's also on Wax. You know what I'm saying? For y'all Wax people who appreciate, you know, hip-hop on vinyl.
That's a dope cover, too.
Yeah.
We try to preach the, you know, I promote music for a living. I be trying to tell these guys, you got to get back to this traditional stuff. Y'all let major labels dictate how you sell your music, where you sell your music, and for how much you get paid, and you're not even signed to a major label.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. So I do got distribution. I got my own label, Real Rap Records. I got distribution through Bungalow Music and Film and Universal. So, you know, I got a little back in to distribute the music I'm bringing out, but I got creative control to do what I want to do. I also do gospel rap. You know, I rap for the Lord. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. And so I do what I call gift rap. And that's also
I saw that, the gift rap thing. I saw that.
Yeah. So that's like what's going on with me, bro, right now, as well as, you know, Tough Crew still out here performing and, you know, doing their thing too as well. But I'm
where y'all usually get y'all shows at nowadays?
It depends. A lot of them always locally, but then, you know, we can go overseas. We're big overseas.
Overseas is always good,
Yeah, we big in Europe.
Okay.
So that's the opportunity. We're going to do a tour over there at some point soon, probably next year.
Thank God for Europe, man. Still loving real hip hop, right?
Fact. That's the harder. That's the heart of real hip hop over there.
Yeah.
They never stop hip hopping.
Europe Europe and the West Coast. That was it. Mm-hmm. Everybody else in America decided, now we're not hip hopping no more on the mainstream aspect.
Yep. It was so fun. We went over there and they was having breakdance battles, young breakers versus old breakers, and all in the same show. It was just love.
That's what's up. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out. You're more than welcome to come back on. I'm gonna make sure I send you my email if you want to send any music for music reviews. I do live music reviews as well.
Word, send that over to me. Shout out to all the Tough Crew fans out there. You know, if y'all want to tap in with me, my label, Real Rap Records. I got the website. It's under construction. www.realraprecords.com. I'm also at Tough Crew Tone 215 on IG. Also at Tone Love on FB, and you know, Tone Love 940 on TikTok. So y'all can tap in with me. But I got my own music right now coming out. I call it TL Soul Teacher Season. And Tuff Crew still together, moving strong. But I got some stuff I want to get off my chest. Y'all check out for me, and all y'all Eagles fans that's abroad, tap in with me for this hard copy. Get your memorabilia copy of the Bird Gang song, also including Bring It Home for Jerome.
All right, appreciate you. You a friend of the show. Like I said, you want to come back on, please do. When I get off here, I'll text you the email. Anytime you want to send me music, please do. And definitely shouts out to DJ Too Tough for linking us up, man.
I appreciate you, Paul Masson. And y'all keep tapping in with Live from Vietnam. It's one of the realest podcasts out there, you know what I'm saying? Y'all check out, you'll see artists, real artists like me, tapping in with my brother. He dealing with the real, for sure. So check him out. Peace and love, Paul Masson. Salute.
All right, enjoy your night, man.
Yes, you too, bro.
All right, peace.
All right, peace.
Well, there you have it. Tone Love, Tuff Crew, one of the first groups out of Philly in the hip-hop. They started around 85, 86. I think the first major single was around 89. And charting 25 on the hip-hop charts when you didn't have a major situation, even back then, was probably really, really good accomplishment. Philly's always been big in hip-hop. You know, they're up there with Jersey, as far as I'm concerned. New York, Philly, Jersey. You know, Jersey might have Philly a little bit beat because of the just amount of MCs out there, but New York, Philly, and Jersey were really the top three for a long time until, you know, the West Coast started getting popping. Let's see who tuned in earlier. Mr. Myrtle Beach, Robert Emos. Appreciate you. Ace, appreciate you. Rick's Lounge, our bottoms up. Rick's Lounge, that's what I was talking about. Rick's Lounge was known like all over the United States because of the military. Every time they would go to some other military base, they would always tell cats, if you go to Fayetteville, go to Rick's Lounge. So I don't know what time I'm going to do music reviews. Probably around 4 or 5 p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to do music reviews. Make sure y'all submit to livefromvietnam@gmail.com. Shouts out to my man DJ Too Tough for basically setting up the interview. And we're going to have Too Tough back on here soon as well. Shouts out to Tone Love for taking his time out and telling some of the Tough Crew story, you know. And that's the thing, like, you know, every group member has their own perspective and you know, own view of what was going on with the situations and stuff like that, you know. But also tomorrow I'm going to talk about why radio is still better than streaming, how radio pays out more than streaming, and how you can actually break a song on radio, but you're not really breaking it through streaming, not without social media, that's for sure. We're about to wrap it up, man. Appreciate everybody tuning in. We go live on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Audio version will go to Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much, much more. We're about to hit you with that outro. Peace, and I'm out.